Thank you. Worst applause ever. And I get it. I haven't done anything, so I don't really deserve anything. It's like, why am I? Hold on. There you go. It's like, why am I tipping when I haven't eaten my meal yet, right? So I get it. I totally understand. We are in this series called Mastermind. We're looking at these verses. One of the most popular, one of the most crucial chapters in the entire Bible is Romans chapter 12. In fact, if all you had on a deserted island was one book of the Bible, Romans would be the one to have, because it's foundational. It's got amazing doctrine. But let's look at our first verse. This is the whole reason why we're doing this series. Do not be conformed to the patterns of this world. And yar, right? What we listen to, what we watch, the media that hits us. We don't even know it, but we slide into conformity. So what's the answer to that? But be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Wouldn't it be great if there was a God that could renew your mind, that could change the way you think, the brain patterns? Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. I don't know a single person that doesn't want to renew something. You're stuck in a habit, just stuck. Sometimes for years, sometimes for decades, you want out. Stuck in a way of thinking that is demeaning to you. You know, it's what a coach said or what a boyfriend said or whatever, and it still echoes in your mind. It doesn't reflect how God thinks about you. It doesn't reflect reality. But wouldn't it be great to get rid of that, to renew our mind, to get out old habits, to get out old junk, old ways of thinking that don't help us? So we're taking a month to figure out how to do this. We're looking at this one chapter. Now, we're going to look at Romans 12, starting in verse 9. And I got to tell you, this reads a little like a grocery list. So I got a bunch of stuff in there. Love must be sincere. There's one thought. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. There's another thought. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor, serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope. Be patient in affliction. Be faithful in prayer. Share with the Lord's people who are in need and practice hospitality. You see what I'm saying? It's like getting a drink out of a fire hydrant. There's so much in those few verses. Total grocery list. Be sincere. Fruit Loops. You know, like, Paul, what are we supposed to do with this? Actually, what I'm asking is, Paul, how am I supposed to preach on this? So here's what I came up with. I'm going to give you some of these ideas, and I'm going to give you some stories that I've seen in my career as a pastor that are examples of people that have done these things, that have transformed their minds in some of these areas. And the first one is this. Love must be sincere. The word sincere here means undisguised, or, if you will, unmasked. Now, 5 years ago, the phrase unmasked would have had no emotional charge in my life. But remember, I hated masked. I did not like that part of our history. You know, like you get out of your car, you walk into the grocery store halfway there. Oh, I forgot my mask. So then I go back and I get my mask and I walk into the grocery store and I'm smiling at everybody like an idiot. I still don't understand the people. You saw this, right? They're driving alone. With a mask. What is it that we didn't like about that? Well, we couldn't connect, right? I mean, some of you loved it. Some of you were so happy you didn't have to connect with anybody. And I got to admit, you know, I was a pastor of a church in the same community for 25 years. Sometimes when I go to the store, I just want to get eggs, man. I don't want to solve your marriage problem. So the mask was pretty good. But the mask disguises us, right? And this isn't anything new for us, because we're good at disguising. We mask the problems that our children are going through Because if you see that my children are going through problems, then you're going to judge me as a parent. And we mask our own personal issues. This is what Christians do. We share the things that we used to struggle with, right? That we're over already. Those are the things that we share. We don't share what's actually going on in our lives. We mask it. We mask work problems. We want to share with you what's on our highlight reel, not the difficult things. And listen, here's what I need you to understand. This is, we're talking about being authentic and being real. And somehow in our thinking, we think more people will like us if I only have good on my ledger. And let me tell you something. I have no time for those people. I want people who are broken and weak and struggle just like Jeremy. I mean, just like me. Sorry, Jeremy. I don't know why I picked you out right then. I was at a small group with a bunch of guys. And you know, if you've ever been a bunch of guys, they're not great at being authentic and real. You know, and I think one of the questions I started out this group with, this very first meeting, is tell me a little bit about your family. And what you tend to get is, my dad was a, you know, Cardinals fan for life. You know, my mom really made great fried chicken. You know, really deep things you get from guys. And one guy shared and said this. He started. And he said, you know, I never really felt connected to my mom all growing up. And then I found out in eighth grade that she had been lying to me that I was not her biological child and that I was adopted. And then the tears started to flow down his cheeks. Let me tell you something. We all shared that night. We all let people in. It wasn't enough. We didn't care what team your dad liked. We wanted to know about the hurt and the pain because one person chose to be authentic. Love must be sincere. Okay, let's keep reading through our list. Hate what is evil, cling to what is good. Okay, in the next couple minutes, I want to challenge you to hate. All right? Who's up for that? You ready? I'm going to challenge you to hate, which is what a lot of people outside of the church think we do in here. They think that it is the Christian's job to figure out what's wrong and how to hate it and how to march against it and how to be at the parade throwing eggs. But let me tell you something. I have been at church for a very long time, and I don't have a history with people of haters. I have this long history of people who are world-class lovers. At my last church, there was a woman, and her name was Katie, and she was just a delightful human being. And Katie had a friend, and this friend got pregnant and carried her baby for 22 weeks and lost it. And then she carried her next baby for 23 weeks and her organs started to shut down. And the doctor looked her in the eye and said, "You cannot get pregnant. You won't live through that." And Katie said to her friend, "I will carry your baby. Not for money. You can make, do you know this? If you're looking for a job, you can make money as a surrogate." And Katie didn't just do it once. She did it twice. Same family. Not a Christian family. World class. My friend Jill moved away, and she was a nurse practitioner, and she was working with this whole, you know, big group of doctors. One of her favorite doctors had kidney failure, so she had herself tested and gave him a kidney. that this church is filled with those kinds of world-class loving people. But as this says, hate to evil, cling to what is good. You know what? In the book of Ecclesiastes, it says there's a time to hate. And there is a time to hate. And it's not to hate the people around us. There's a time to hate the evil inside of us. Jesus said this, if your right eye causes you to stumble, are you paying attention? Gouge it out and throw it away. I'm pretty sure Jesus is being figurative here. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than the whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. Throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. Jesus is calling us to extreme reaction. And why is that? Here's why. Because we generally don't hate evil in our lives. We tolerate evil. We look the other way. We allow ourselves to coexist with evil. And it sounds like this. It's a good show. It's just got a few bad parts. It's a good book. It's just a little sexy. It's a good business deal. I just had to stretch the truth a little bit to make it happen. This is the time to hate. When evil has snuck into your life and it's stuck there. And there's a time you just need to hate it. You need to not just fast forward the Netflix show. You need to stop watching the Netflix show. There's a time when you need to not hope you have enough willpower, but to drag your butt to an NA meeting. There's a time when you don't just need to cut back on alcohol. It needs to go away. Now, I said this once. I was talking to a group of people about them and their kids and how when they're 14, there's no gray areas, right? When you're 14, there's not like, well, daddy can have a margarita, but you can't until you're 21, right? They don't get that. It doesn't make sense. And if you don't think they have access when you're 14, you're wrong. So I gave that message. 1 year later, I was talking to this buddy. He got a new car, and he was showing it off. And he said, you know, after that message, I stopped drinking. Here's what was remarkable about that. All his money for generations, alcohol distributorship. But he realized to be an example to his kid, to keep his kid safe, he's going to have to be rough with evil. I'm not saying all alcohol is evil. You hear me, right? In his life, it was not what he wanted to do, so he cut it out. This verse tells us that we need to have an extreme reaction, that there is a time we need to hate what is evil. Okay, let's keep going. Next says, be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. All right? Put the people around you above yourselves. Do you know I have written and performed over 700 weddings? I was the San Diego wedding guy, the Arizona wedding guy. Hopefully someday I'll be the Bahamas wedding guy, right? That would be amazing. And in each of these weddings, I've done bunches of weddings, I've done weddings for my children, and every one of my weddings, I'll say this, that 50-50 doesn't work. A lot of couples figure when they get married, we'll just do this, we'll slide it down the middle, okay? As long as you do your 50% and she does her 50%, we'll be all good. But there's a problem with 50-50. 50-50 leads to comparison, 50-50 leads to competition, and I'll tell you, 50-50 does not work, especially when it comes to closet space. Am I right, guys? You ain't getting 50. The only kind of marriage that works is 100%. That's where you put the needs of your spouse above your needs 100% of the time. And they do the same. Now, I never get pushback when I do this at a wedding because they're bright-eyed and they're ready. Everything's going to be great for us. But there are times when I give that message to people like you and you go, look, man, I'm not buying it. because I've been the one sacrificing for that guy for so long, and he has done nothing. It has not led anywhere. If that is you, I get it. But let me tell you what does not work. Looking out for your needs and putting them first never works. The only thing that ever works is putting the needs of that other person above your own. That's the only thing that will ever work for you. When you put yourself first and your needs first, and it's easy. Culturally, this is what we do. I just need to get some me time. You know, I just got to live in my truth. Right? I just have to self-care. That is, for the most part, by definition, selfishness. Putting yourself first. And the only way we can make a relationship work is when we put the other person's needs above our own. Children, friends, family. That's the way it works. Okay, let's keep going. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Okay, spiritual zeal. Do you think that describes us culturally? It really doesn't, and we're going the opposite direction. So, do you know who the nuns are? The nuns? N-O-N-E-S. Serena knows who the nuns are. More and more people are identifying as nuns. Not N-U-N-S. Nuns, when they are asked on a survey to determine what their spiritual affiliation is, they say none. And that's up to 30%. Culturally, our spiritual fervor is down. But I will say this, not in this place. Not here. If you pay attention at all, you will see people with spiritual zeal. And I'm going to talk about one of them right now. In fact, I got a list. And so instead of just giving you this list, we're going to do a quick award ceremony. All right? And the first award is going to go to Brent Sinclair. And Brent Sinclair is not here. He's in Oklahoma. He was able to watch the Oklahoma-Texas game in which they got destroyed in Oklahoma. Good for you, Brent. Did anybody recognize the place when you drove up today? It's beautiful, right? You see the new paint? You see the building that got destroyed? The office that's set up? Brent did this. He painted the whole building with a toothbrush. He could. He didn't. He got people to do it. But Brent has such fervor for this place. So I'm giving Brent this award. It is the Larry the Cable Guy Get Her Done Award. Now, I'm going to go, same family, hit Serena up. Okay, do you guys know what Serena does? Serena does young adults. She does life groups. She speaks. She visits people in the hospital. She prays. She does the single best benedictions ever. Yeah, she plays the keys, right? Usually grumpy, right? She's always looking angry up there. Never, always with a smile. But here's what Serena does that you probably know, but I want to point out anyway. That Serena is always the one who points us to Jesus. Always. And so I'm giving her the Point to Jesus Award. And this right here, that he's pointing. See, he's pointing directly at Serena right now. So thank you for that. All right? Okay, we're going in the back. Jill is passionate, and she does all of our marketing and media. And I can't break down everything, but everything you see like this, you know, everything is Jill. It's what she does. But do you also know whenever you watch a video, there's closed captioning? Because Jill goes the extra mile because she knows that there are some people that have a difficult time hearing, and she doesn't want anybody to not hear the gospel, so she goes the extra mile. Have you ever heard of the phrase guerrilla marketing? Guerrilla marketing is an advertising strategy in which a company uses surprise and or unconventional interactions in order to promote itself. Jill does that for us. So I'm giving her the Guerrilla Marketing Award. Now, I realize, like, this is the worst image to give to a woman. And I thought, well, maybe I'll look up female gorillas. It would have done no better. So forgive me. Just go up to Jill and say, thank you for what you do. Sorry about Jack. Okay? Okay, Rachel. I got a list for Rachel. Rachel does children's ministry, youth ministry, announcements. And when she does announcements, like, she's cramming. She wants to make sure she gets it perfect. She does speaking. She's on the pastor's search committee. Do you know what this group is? This is the group actively searching to replace me as quickly as possible. She's raising three kids, even more difficult. Four kids, sorry, missed a kid. What a big deal. You do it too. And worst of all, she's raising Justin in the back. She juggles all these things and always with a smile on her face. And so I'm giving her the Fire Juggler Award right there. Well, it's a really small picture, but you can see she's fire juggling. Interesting, I once hired jugglers for an event at our church, and they were just getting into fire juggling, and they were bad. And so we had to keep telling the kids, get back, get back. But that's not Rachel. She's good. All right, let me explain something that happens if you're not here at 8:30 in the morning. We always gather over there. And we gather there to pray, and we're praying for you, we're praying for the service. And generally at these meetings, they all end the same way. Ricky gathers us all together. He makes us put our hands in like we're a football team, and he goes, 1, 2, 3, Jesus! Because Ricky is always pointing to Jesus as well, like Serena, but the kinds of things that Ricky will say is, I just want somebody today to come to church and find Jesus. Those words come out of Ricky's mouth all the time. So I'm giving Ricky the, I think I found myself a cheerleader award. There it is. Thank you for modeling that for us, Ricky. It was hard to get him in that outfit, but... All right. You know, it's not just the staff that makes a difference here. There are other people, too. Do you like eating? Does anybody here like eating? Have you ever noticed that we eat around here? Have I brought that up before? We're, like, eating all the time. And there's never been a church that is more into eating. None of this happens without our friend, Gabriella. Gabriella is our hospitality team lead. And not only that, do you know that Gabriella also organizes birthday parties at the Modesto Gospel Mission? You know, I'll often talk about the difficult, hard-to-reach people in our world, like Raider fans and people who listen to country. Gabriella has a more difficult group to reach out to. Do you know who she works with? Lawyers. And you know what? Gabriella does it all with a smile on her face. So I'm giving her the Don't Curb Your Enthusiasm Award. We got a picture. There he is. That's... Michaela Meyer. I have a list of things Michaela Meyer does. She is in young adults. She works with young youth. She's a youth leader. Not only does she work with youth, but she meets them outside of youth meetings. She's also on the pastor's search committee because she doesn't like me. Trying to get me out. She's at church every week. She does everything. And she's, how old is she? 24. What were you doing when you were 24? Not that. So I'm giving Michaela the Swiss Army Knife Award. There's Michaela. And I got one last one. Serena reached out to me, and she wanted to make sure I didn't miss this. So she texted me, "Hi, Jack. I know you have several examples for the sermon, but Missy has gone above and beyond even before she was on staff. She helped our former worship pastor, has been a life group leader and for some time, has done it, and is doing great evangelism in her neighborhood. She is a wonder." Here's what I notice about Missy. She does everything with this giant smile on her face. So you got to be old enough to understand this, but I've given her the Cheshire Cat Award. Let me tell you something. If you lack spiritual zeal, I got a recommendation. Get yourself here. Hang out with these people. Let them rub off on you. They don't just do it for money. They do it because they believe and they love Jesus and they want to reflect him. One of the things I've said about them many times, and it sounds weird, they just smell like Jesus. So get around them and pick up that smell. Okay, I got a couple more. Joyful in hope, patient in affliction. All right? On first glance, these two phrases do not seem like they should fit together. Joyful in hope, patient in affliction. We think of joyful people who don't have, they're the people that don't have affliction, right? They're the ones their lives are easier. Let me read you a quote. I love this quote. It's from David Brooks, The Second Mountain, and he wrote this. You might think a bright personality would come from an unburdened life, a life of pleasures and constant delights. But if you closely look at joyful people, you notice that very often the people who have the most incandescent souls have taken on the heaviest burdens. There is a connection between joyful and hope, patient in affliction. The most joyful are the ones that have taken on the difficult. Let me give you a couple examples. Benjamin Hardy is a writer who described the decision to take on three foster children in Inc. magazine. And he said this, before having that personal load to carry, I was somewhat complacent. I lacked the urgency. I didn't have the traction to move forward. A life of ease is not the pathway to growth and happiness. On the contrary, a life of ease is how you get stuck and confused in life. Taking on those kids meant knowing more about frustration, anxiety, fatigue, but also elation, sweetness, and especially caring love. Permanent joy seems to emerge when desire is turned outward for others. Does anybody agree with that? Gregory Boyle, he ministers to gang members in Los Angeles and captures the difference between a life lived for self and one lived for others. Compassion is always, at its most authentic, about a shift from the cramped world of self-preoccupation and into a more expansive place of fellowship. You have to lose yourself to find yourself. Who said that? I think it was Jesus. Listen, this is so true, that those people in my life that have given themselves to something bigger than themselves, they're the ones I want to be with. They're the ones I want to hang out with. They're the ones that have this joy that just overflows to everybody else. I want to give you a book recommendation. It is the single most impactful book I've read in the last 5 years outside of the Bible. Bible's always the winner, but this one in the last 5 years that I just read it this last year. It's called The Upside of Stress, right? The Upside of Stress by Kelly McGonigal. I'll have her name up in just a second. I have a quote I want to give to you in just a second. Here's how we think of stress. Here's the way media portrays stress. Stress is a killer. The stress will kill you. If you have too much stress in your life, bad for you. All these terrible things will happen. Well, they've done research to find that stress is not the killer. It's your attitude towards stress that's the killer. That people who think that stress is a killer, it will be a killer for them. If people who think that stress is the thing that is going to cause growth and movement and develop maturity, that those people, their health is no different than anybody else's health. And it doesn't matter how much stress they have because they now view stress differently. It's not something to be avoided and to run from. It's something to lean into. And here's the quote. I love this so much. Kelly said this, a meaningful life is a stressful life. Now let me explain. I would wager to guess that the things that cause you the most stress are the ones that cause you the most meaning. Who here has children? Right? I mean, you start with kids and it's stressful because they are trying to die, right? They just want to leap off of things, and they want to grab forks and shove them in sockets. Anything that they can do. Oh, there's an oven. Let's run towards that thing. There's a fire. Oh, man, that looks exciting. Let's do that. We're just trying to keep them alive. And then they grow up. And let me tell you something. My kids are all grown. When they get older, it doesn't make it easier. The stakes just get higher. These people are stressing me out. But I will tell you that the most rich and dear and meaningful moments happen around my kids. Watching my daughter raise her daughter just is, it fills me. It's unbelievable. One of my favorite things in the world is to watch one of my other daughters who plays music. And she'll do like open mic nights. And when I am there, I am just, I'm taking it all in. I can't stop smiling. There are moments like that. In fact, did I tell you it was my birthday? I'm still waiting for the gift cards, people. My daughter, my two youngest daughters pooled their money and they bought me a brand new guitar. So now I have a daughter, she'll come over to the house and she'll show me how to play. Beautiful. The most meaningful parts of your life are the most stressful parts. And work can be that same way. Work causes you stress. But if you focus on the people at your work and love the people at your work, you're going to find amazing meaning. You know what else is stressful? Church is stressful. Serena, do I hear an amen? She said at times because she's being nice. You people stress us out. Come on now. But I'll tell you, when we get to be on the front row and see lives changed, it's worth it. These two thoughts are not randomly placed together. Because a meaningful life is a stressful life. Okay, look, I think I have a quote. Is it a Helen Keller quote? Do I have that? Or do I just have to read it? Maybe I just have to read it. She says, there's joy in self-forgetfulness. So I try to make the light in others' eyes my sun, the music in others' ears my symphony, the smile on others' lips my happiness. All right, I got one more. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Have you ever taken a test? You knew all the answers? That feels good, right? Sometimes you get that at church. You show up at church and the pastor's speaking on something you're already pretty good at. In fact, last week I spoke on humility and pride, and I had somebody come up to me and go, man, I'm so glad you spoke on humility because I'm already pretty good at it. Which, if you could say that, maybe you're not as good as you think. But this one, share with the Lord's people who are in need, practice hospitality. You guys, I can tell you as an outsider, there are so many that are so good at this. I showed up day one, and I was greeted. I wasn't even out of, I'm barely out of my car, and I was greeted by this guy. His name's Mark Phelps, who's just yelling at me, hey, welcome to Covenant Grove. Who are you? And then you walk inside, and people are there. And then I took this job in the Koskies. Just invited me to live in their home. They didn't even know me. And they fed me and they take me to dinner. The Koskies did my laundry. The Koskies know what kind of underwear I wear. God, just so, so great. Great people. And now the Benavides have taken that on. And they're treating me royally. Wait till they get to know me. But this place is filled with hospitable people. I mean, I got to tell you, you have one who's just world class, and she's not going to like that I'm going to talk about her, but Pam, man, Pam is just, if you're new, she's all over you like white on rice. I mean, she's just there. And if you didn't know better, you'd think she's stalking you. Pam knows this, that when people walk in that door, what matters is that they feel warm and welcome. do you wonder why we would spend money to paint this place and to build offices? Do you ever wonder, like, yeah, that seems like a waste. Yeah, I don't need it. Yeah, I was fine walking into it last week when it was ugly. We do things like that because what is most important to us is that people who walk in here who are far from Jesus meet him. And when we can look better, it matters to people. It doesn't matter to most of you guys because you guys are faithful and you realize that image doesn't matter that much, but there are people that it matters to. But you know what matters more than image? People walking in these doors and feeling loved and accepted. And that's what you do well. Keep doing it. So there's too much in this for you to do it all. So I want you to choose one. Figure it out. Where do you need to work? Love must be sincere. Do you need to work on your sincerity? Do you need to be authentic with people? Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Is there something in your life that you have to hate and get rid of and be mean to? Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Do you need to consider in your relationships how to put the needs of people above you? Never lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Do you need to up that spiritual fervor and get involved here? Be on the media team. Help with kids. Greet. Do you need to be joyful in hope, patient in affliction? Do you need to introduce some stress in your life to introduce some meaning? Do you need to practice hospitality? Which one's on your list? Let's close like this. Why don't you bow your head? They've given me a lot of challenges today, but is there one that jumped out? Just take a moment. Say, God, help me to be good at this thing. Lord Jesus, I pray for my friends. And God, I pray that you would get us to this place where we're not thinking so much about ourselves, but for the needs of people around us. And then in the process, you would help us to no longer conform, but transformed in the way we think. In your name we pray. Amen.